Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour. This is David Corey along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey there, David, and good evening. We have more news from Washington and lots of practical information for veterans and their families. Again, this is PTSD Awareness Month, and so we will talk more about PTSD and provide information to help our veterans. For those of you who have missed our shows the past 3 weeks, I would recommend that you listen to our recorded shows on our BBS Radio website at bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. That's bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. Our guests this month have included Rebecca Winkler, whose son Drew was an Iraq war veteran who died by suicide after suffering from severe PTSD for 5 years. Another of our guests was Matt Williams, a combat veteran of both Iraq and Afghanistan, and now a singer and songwriter. So listen to the recorded shows for great insight about PTSD and its effects on veterans and their families. Back to you, David.
Thank you, Richard. And for those who are first-time listeners to our program, please know that this show is not only a news show, but it's also a call-in show that welcomes your views, your comments, and your questions. So you can call us at any time during the show. If you want to grab your pen and paper, I'll give you the phone number. This is toll-free 1-888-627-6008. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008. I would like to recognize and thank the sponsors of tonight's show, American Legion's John F. Murphy, Post 303 of Medina Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles M. Newman of Florida, and Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents veterans and disability cases and military personnel actions. Back to you, Rick.
Thank you, David. Now some news from Washington. This past Friday, June 23rd, President Trump signed into law new employment and whistleblower rules for the Department of Veteran Affairs. The VA Accountability and Whistleblower Protection Act of 2017 makes permanent an office created by a Trump executive order earlier this year to look into claims made by whistleblowers and to protect them from retaliation. It also shortens the time frames allowed for employee appeals of disciplinary actions and mandates that courts reviewing the actions uphold them if there is substantial evidence that they are warranted. President Trump said, "This is one of the largest reforms to the VA in its history. It is a reform that I campaigned on, and now I'm thrilled to be able to sign that promise into law. VA accountability is essential to making sure our veterans are treated with the respect they have so richly earned through their blood, sweat, and tears." Earlier in the week, VA Secretary David Shulkin praised the accountability legislation as a major reform for his department, one that will help prepare the image of its 350,000-plus workforce by getting rid of criminal or negligent employees. "I need the ability to remove employees who are no longer working to help veterans," Dr. Shulkin stated, "and I think this will dramatically improve morale and recruitment. When people are allowed to remain in jobs when they aren't respecting the values of the organizations, that's harmful and not helpful." The law also includes new protections for whistleblowers who help highlight problems in the workforce, VA workforce, and gives the VA secretary authority to directly appoint hospital directors and an ability that they have argued will make them more compatible in recruiting top talent. The big difference with this legislation now is that you have a White House and VA that supports the idea, said Dan Caldwell, policy director for the Concerned Veterans for America, one of the leading groups behind the measure. "The last administration was not serious about accountability or getting the power it got." But Shulkin's predecessor, former VA Secretary Bob McDonald, took a different approach, saying that the VA cannot fire its way to success. Secretary Shulkin has downplayed how much immediate effect the legislation will have. He described the number of VA employees who need to be fired as very small and promised it would not lead to a mass firing in his department. I don't think this is going to be something that is abused, he said at an event just before the bill signing. I take it seriously that everyone deserves due process. We're going to make sure due process exists. But when we find evidence, we've seen a lot of cases recently in the process that have been so frustrating. President Trump promised there are more reforms to come. The department has already established a new office to oversee the implementation of the accountability laws and look for similar future reforms. Shulkin said he expects to start issuing internal rules related to the new law earlier next week. David, I think we can only hope and just watch as this thing goes along, and hopefully it's going to have the impact that it needs to have. I would disagree with Secretary Shulkin about it being a small group. Just in my own world and representing VA employees, I'm seeing what I see, especially over at St. Pete Regional Office, some very, very outrageous activity going there that's harmful to current VA employees. In another
Rick, before we go to that next news item, if we could, we have Rebecca Winkler on line four, if she's still there. Doug, if you could bring her on.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hello, Rebecca. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. It's Monday.
Yes.
Hey, Rebecca.
That's a tough day. Yes.
Hi, Richard.
What would you like to share with us this evening?
First I want to make sure that I preface everything that I give my opinion about on here with you guys. Even though I'm co-founder of Winkler's Wish Foundation to help veterans, I'm giving you my opinion as a disabled vet. So when I tell you what I think and what I feel, I'm telling you because I am a disabled vet. And I am the spouse of a disabled vet who did over 20 years, and I am the mother of a veteran who I consider a disabled vet who was lost to PTSD suicide. So that's kind of the opinion that I'm, you know, I just want to make sure that I kind of keep the two separated to not kind of blur the lines as much as not possible. So much of the stuff that's coming out just kind of really scares me because so much of the new news, I said it so many times in interviews. We had a peer meeting with some new veterans this past Saturday in Crestview, Florida, and I had three separate veterans say almost the same things that I say in almost all of our interviews, that we as a country, and I include myself, made promises time and time and time again to our veterans, and we haven't kept them. And we've almost treated our veterans like commodities. We've taken them in, we've used them up, and then we just throw them away.
Yeah.
And that exact phrase was used by a veteran that drove 45 minutes to come to our group. And he said, I feel like I was like taken to the back of a plane when I got out and just kind of pushed out the back without a parachute. He says, I don't feel like I belong anywhere. I was used up and then just thrown away. And now with a lot of these changes coming down, it's like, wow, if these men and women felt like that before, what's going to happen with some of this stuff that's, you know, being talked about and put up for a vote and legislation being proposed and stuff like that? Where are the promises we made?
Right. You know, I think that's an important
Rebecca,
point.
One of the things that you raise, which is a very good point, is, you know, we David and I, we have a broad range of veterans going back to Vietnam and even some Korean War, and we've had some World War II, but these Iraqi and Afghanistan veterans coming out, I'm very concerned about some of these policy decisions coming out of D.C., some of the legislation that's coming out of D.C., and how it's going to affect these young men and women. And so, you know, and hopefully the Iraqi and Afghanistan veterans will learn from our Vietnam vets in that they will apply for their disability compensation soon after they separate. If they do what historically the veterans have done, they're going to wait until they're 40 or 50 years old. And I'm really concerned that this legislation is going to bar them from the compensation that they were expecting being put in harm's way. What do you think about that?
I agree. I totally agree. And some of the reactions that we're getting and we're reading about and hearing about is that you have a lot of these veterans that are coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq, and they're getting out. And, you know, they've heard all the horror stories about what it's like to deal with the VA, what it's like to try and get an appointment. That same gentleman that, you know, I mentioned before said, here at our local VA, he had an appointment in, I think, May or June, and they called and canceled and said, hey, we're going to have to reschedule it for July. And then called and canceled and just said, we're probably going to have to schedule it out further. So we have so many of these young men and women who've heard all of this. Drew, my son, he only went to the VA because I took him. I put him in my car after he crashed because he ran out of meds given to him by the Air Force psychiatrist for his PTSD, and I walked him into the VA. And I said, there's two options. You're going to see him today, and you're going to help him, or I'm going to walk to Congressman, I'm walking into Congressman Miller's local office and let him know you refuse to see a vet. So they hear these stories and they're like, they don't want to go through that. They don't want to deal with having to fight to get care that they were promised. I mean, it is emotionally and physically draining what they have to go through. Just, I mean, even if they don't even have any mental health issues, just to get a physical appointment can take over a month. For just a regular primary care appointment can take over a month. And most of them are like, I just don't want to do all that. So they don't even do it. And like you said, if legislation goes through that puts a time limit on it, by the time they get the strength up or a family member has beat them down until they finally go, it could be too late.
Yeah, I interviewed a new veteran, new client today. And he was a Vietnam vet, served in Vietnam for a year, from 1968 to 1969. And clearly, the disabilities that he put in for compensation a few years ago were covered under the Agent Orange presumption. It was his claim was denied. And I said, well, why didn't you appeal? And he just looked at me and he said, you know, I'm just tired. I said, well, didn't anyone explain to you that, you know, you served in Vietnam, you're exposed to Agent Orange, therefore it's presumed that your ischemic heart disease should have been covered. He goes, well, they didn't put it like that, Mr. Hurley. But, you know, when I told him he should have appealed, he just kind of threw up his hand. What do you think?
Yeah, it seems to be, this is my opinion again, that it is a pattern that, in making it so difficult for veterans, so labor-intensive and mentally exhausting for them to fight for the benefits that they've already fought for. They've already paid the price. There should be no other price of admission for these benefits. They already paid the price. They served in the military.
And now they have to fight again. I think if I could interject, I think that's feedback the Secretary Shulkin needs to be hearing. I'd like to give out the President Trump's hotline for veterans in case anyone wants to take this down. It's a good way to give feedback to the White House. The number is 1-855-948-2311. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-948-2311. It's an opportunity for veterans and their families to give feedback directly to the White House, and hopefully it will filter to Dr. Shulkin. So, Rebecca, thanks so much for calling tonight, and we thank you again for being on our show the other week. And thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Doug,
thank
I think
you,
if,
thank you, Becca.
If Mr. Colgrove is still on line three, why don't we take his call, too? Hello?
He dropped off.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Well,
call back, Mr. Colgrove.
Maybe he'll call back. But meanwhile, Rick, why don't you tell us the other news from this past Friday, some of the things that the VA Secretary Shulkin said with regards to the disability compensation system. I understand that he was at a meeting sponsored by George W. Bush's Institute and the Military Service Initiative last Friday. So what can you tell us about his remarks, Secretary Shulkin's remarks about the disability compensation system?
Yeah, I guess I can stomach this one. But here is what Secretary Shulkin said at that meeting, and I quote, "It's time to rethink a veteran disability system that incentivizes disability. Our current disability system that is designed from 50 to 60 or 70 years ago, I would suggest it's not sustainable and may not be achieving the results of well-being for our veterans." He also stated, "Our system incentivizes disability when our system should be incentivizing health and well-being. That doesn't mean pulling back disability compensation benefits," he said. "Everybody recognizes that we have a responsibility as a country to provide and be able to supplement resources for veterans that were harmed or injured during their time of duty. I don't think anybody's suggesting that we take away our commitment to that," he said. "But to suggest that there is not a better way to do things is also wrong." He went on to say, "I do believe we need to begin to start having a discussion and a dialogue, not so much about withdrawing our commitment, but how to make the system better to improve outcomes for veterans. I think that rethinking how we could approach disability is a key topic that's going to be very important in future years." I put that out there to our listeners and anybody who wants to call in about, you know, the Secretary Shulkin isn't saying we're not going to pull back, but at the same time, he's looking for changes.
And yeah, Rick, we have a caller on line four, if he's still there. Larry on line four from Washington. Doug, if he's still there, why don't we take his call? Hello, Larry?
Hello.
Yeah. Larry. This is yeah. David Corey. How are you tonight?
Hi, David. I'm fine. I saw Richard earlier today. I got some good news. I had been, I had to go through QTC Medical Services for compensation and pension, the program itself. And there's a few things. Number one, you've got to be your own advocate, along with hooking up with you guys. And it's a new program where civilian doctors actually check you out. And then, you know, they're working in conjunction with the VA. So the thing is, when they send you your appointment, and it can be anywhere, like I had to go to Orlando for hearing, Tampa for mental health, it can be anywhere. And usually you've only got about a week, so you need to pay a lot of attention to the time limits. And I was on vacation in May for 2 weeks. In that 2 weeks, I got my appointment for the mental part of it. Well, when I got home, the time, and I had my mail held, when I got home, the appointment was already passed. I had to get on the line and call QTC, which I did. They said they'd already sent it back, so I called the regional office and talked to a really helpful young man, and he got me set up with another appointment, but I didn't know if it was going to happen or not, and it did. And again, when I did get it, I had to go down to Davis Island, actually, and it's about an hour's drive from where I live. But I only had about a week. And if you don't pay attention to the time, to the date, and you know, or you get it late, you know, you need to act really, really, really fast. So it all worked out. It worked out well. Richard's really helped me. The two of you guys have been great. We're not done yet, but got me out of, because they were taking what disability I did have, they'd taken it out of my military retirement pay, and now Richard's got me over that, where they won't be doing that anymore, and we're continuing to push on. But I just wanted to say, you know, that the guys and gals, women, ladies, have to advocate for themselves, and you got to keep pushing. You got to use patience, but you also need, you know, help, the legal help that you guys have provided also. So I wanted to say thank you very much to Richard, to you also, David. I know you've helped me also. So
thanks so much for calling, Larry.
You got to really pay attention. You have to keep pushing.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
That's great advice, Larry. That's great advice.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you, Rick.
Have a good evening. Thank you. All right. Rick, I wanted to add something.
Yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to add something to what your earlier comment about Secretary Shulkin and his comments about starting a dialogue about the current disability compensation system and the fact that he says that it incentivizes disability when it should be incentivizing health and well-being. I think that question was put to him in the context of perhaps there need to be, you know, health and wellness programs, not that they're going to just pull the rug out financially from veterans. However, you know, what that dialogue, where this will go, is an important issue that we really need to stay, and we will stay on top of it. It's something that veterans need to pay attention to, because, you know, there's a new sheriff in town, as they say, with the VA, and Dr. Shulkin seems to be, in my opinion, operating without being tied into the old assumptions about things, and he's taking things very much from the perspective, as you might expect, as a physician, and he's looking at the wellness of veterans. And if you listen to the entire video of his interview, it's on YouTube. If you look for the Bush Center, they have videos, and it's the June 23rd, 2017 video, where he's talking about, you know, how can we, the importance of veterans, if possible, getting them back to work, giving them a sense of being able to have a fuller life. It was kind of in that context that he started this discussion. But it's a big, big issue, because we also have to keep in mind this is the same secretary that just a month or so ago, as part of his proposed budget, wanted to end individual unemployability benefits at the age of 62. Now, tremendous nationwide outcry by veterans groups, and he's done a 180-degree turn on that. But it's something we need to pay attention to, and if they're good improvements, you know, people ought to be open-minded about those. But another issue that I want to just briefly talk about, we've talked about in prior weeks, but we believe is very important. It's an issue that there's going to be more attention soon in Congress, because it's a priority of Secretary Shulkin, and that is everyone agrees the VA disability compensation claims, and particularly the appeal side, totally broken. People have to wait many, many years just at every stage of the appeal. So the House of Representatives back in May passed a bill that's now in the Senate. The Senate has not voted on it yet. It's called the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017. Surprisingly, most major veteran groups support it, I think because they're being naive. They're putting way too much faith in the VA bureaucracy. Now, there have been a number of groups that have opposed it, though, the largest being the Vietnam Veterans of America, also Military Veterans Advocacy. We had a spokesman for that organization, John Wells, on the show at the end of May. But I just wanted to highlight this as another issue that veterans and their families need to pay attention to. The legislation is designated as S-1024 in the Senate. It's not yet passed the Senate. It did pass in the House, and that version was H.R. 2288. So I suggest you, you check out that information. If you want to go to Corey and Hurley's Facebook page, we've posted information about that, including links where you can find out more information. I encourage people to read about the positions of different veterans groups, and including the Vietnam Veterans of America, which strongly opposes it. and then contact your senators. Go to senate.gov to find out who your two U.S. senators are from your state if you don't know already, and you can contact the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs. It's an easy-to-remember website. It's veterans.senate.gov, veterans.senate.gov, and you can contact that committee where the bill is right now. So it's a very important issue that's going to affect veterans for years in the future if it passes. So, all right, Rick, enough of the stuff from Washington. Let's move back to our topic tonight, which is this is PTSD Awareness Month. What would you like to share more about the issue of PTSD and perhaps, you know, the VA disability benefit questionnaire issues?
Yeah, thank you, David. There are many resources on the internet about PTSD. We talked about many of them on last week's show, which is available as archived podcast on our show, bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. Yes, and tonight I would like to talk about an important issue related to the PTSD. That is the criteria used by the VA to diagnose and evaluate or rate the condition. I'd like to talk about the VA's Disability Benefits Questionnaire, or the DBQs, as we call them. Those are forms which a veteran can take to his or her private doctor for completion. These are very important, and David, you and I have dealt with this on many occasions. You know, the VA has the DBQ form, and as a caller, Larry said, you know, you got to be your own advocate when you're in that room with the psychologist. They tend to, from based on my experience in talking to our clients, is that the interview starts off with talking about their childhood, talking about their family, you know, family upbringing. What kind of home life did they have? Were their parents divorced? Were their parents drinkers? You know, this, according to a lot of my clients, will go on for quite a long time before they even get into the veteran's service. And, so it seems like the focus is that the veteran had a pre-existing PTSD condition of some sort. They were not going to call it PTSD, but it might be some sort of depression. I've seen bipolar use and different symptoms, and that the experience in the military had nothing to do with the veteran's PTSD. I know, David, you've run across this on many occasions.
Right. Yep, that's very true. It seems like sometimes the VA psychologist, and these appointments, these compensation and pension appointments, the actual face time with the psychologist, psychiatrist, might be no more than 20 or 30 minutes. They might have you spend an hour on a computer answering a few hundred questions as part of other types of evaluations. But consider this, you know, out of a 20 or 30 minute appointment, you know, they may be spending what appears to be an inordinate amount of time talking about, the person's medical history aside from military service, which is a fair issue. It is relevant to know if a person has all sorts of other psychological conditions, but you have to keep in mind that someone that completed their military service or that was accepted for military service is going to have been presumed to have been, you know, entering the service after pre-service physical examinations, medical examinations, that they were fit for service. So it's just a little bit too suspicious when the VA sometimes seems to put way too much weight on other things and then use as an excuse for minimizing the effect of military, particularly combat service. So it's something to be aware of. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, David, some of the criteria that is on these DBQ forms is, did the veteran experience, witness, or was confronted with an event that involved actual or threatened death or serious injury or a threat to the physical integrity of himself or others? Did the veteran's response involve intense fear, helplessness, or horror? You know, interesting enough, about 8 months ago, one of our clients who had a horrific experience in the service said he was denied PTSD And I spoke to the person who made the decision, and her response to me was, well, I didn't see anything in his statement that he still had intense fear. And I was shocked because, you know, we had laid out a long statement about how the veteran was having difficulty socializing, difficulty going into crowded places, the mall, Publix, and other situations that were psychologically distressing to the veteran. And yet, because we didn't use the word fear, she turned around and denied this veteran's claim. I have since gone back to make sure that that doesn't happen again. But, you know, David, to have that decision review officer focus on the one word, and she told me, she admitted that that was being told to her by her supervisors. You have to look for that symptom, you know, notwithstanding the feeling of detachment or estrangement from others. I'm just quoting some of these other ones. Hypervigilance, difficulty concentrating, irritability or outbursts of anger, efforts to avoid activities, places, or people that arouse recollection of the trauma. So you can put all that in there into the veteran's statement or into his testimony. But as I understand it from talking to this decision review officer, if you omit the word fear or you don't describe the experience that he still is experiencing fear, that veteran could be denied PTSD. To me, we're playing very loose with some subjective terms. What do you think, David?
Well, I think personally, I think that one decision review officer is incorrect, and her particular perspective is an incorrect one. It's overly demanding of veterans, and it's really not what the rules require. But the other thing I really want to emphasize for our listeners is another thing that the VA will do is, you know, a veteran may submit a claim for a post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, and that's what he or she puts down on the claims form, when in fact perhaps they really haven't been to a psychologist yet and received a diagnosis. They're just kind of self-diagnosing. Well, the problem is they when they do get an evaluation, perhaps the psychologist evaluates them and diagnoses them with depression or anxiety, but technically not enough of the elements for post-traumatic stress. So there have been cases where the VA has then said, the disability side said, well, yeah, you were diagnosed with depression and anxiety, and we believe that was caused by your service, but you weren't diagnosed with PTSD, and therefore your claim, because you couched it in terms of post-traumatic stress, therefore tonight. That's wrong. It happens, but it's wrong, and there's case law. There have been appellate court decisions that have said that's wrong, that the VA and their broad duty to assist is supposed to interpret, you know, the facts and apply the facts as they're presented and look at the psychological conditions broadly, not just the label that the veteran uses. Why? Because the VA won't accept the veteran's diagnosis anyway. So it doesn't make sense to hold the veteran to what might have been an incorrect diagnosis when it was clear the veteran had psychological issues, however they were labeled. So that's important, too, that the veterans be careful. But, you know, I've seen a lot of cases where veteran service officers have not carefully made that distinction. It unfortunately, even though the VA can be wrong, you know what happens? They deny it, and the veteran is left with 3 to 5, 7 or 8 years of appeals to try to fix it. So there's a lot of pitfalls there, and we're just trying to highlight some of those. So, Rick, what are some other...
David, what are some of the PTSD resources?
Well, there's a number of resources. First, let me point out that, you know, we've been talking about these disability benefit questionnaires, these DBQs, and the VA has more than 70 of those. You can find those by going to the VA.gov website, and they've got 3 for mental conditions, 1 for PTSD review, 1 for mental conditions other than PTSD and other than eating disorders, and then they have a 3rd one for eating disorders. So that's a valuable resource to check out, to see those those forms, those DBQs, disability benefit questionnaires, will give you a sense of what the doctor should be looking at, and you can take those to your private doctor for hopefully their completion. As far as other resources for PTSD, I want to give our listeners two very useful websites, and one is from the Defense Centers of Excellence, and the website is After Deployment. That's a long word. After Deployment. DCOE.mil. After deployment. DCOE.mil. And the DCOE stands for Defense Centers of Excellence. This is an excellent resource for service members, for veterans, and their families about coping with, as the name of the website suggests, you know, how do you cope with life after the service member returns from deployment and may be suffering from post-traumatic stress or other psychological and physical disabilities from that. And then the other website is the National Center for Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, and that's ptsd.va.gov. That's ptsd.va.gov. Those are two excellent websites. So, if you also, another useful resource, if you go to our law firm's website, which is CoreyandHurleyLawGroup.com, CoreyandHurleyLawGroup.com, you can find just on our homepage links to the National Center for PTSD, the VA's DBQs, and many other very useful things. We've tried to make it a little easier with fewer layers than the VA's website. So I encourage listeners to check those out. Rick, any other thoughts on PTSD issues and perhaps the DBQ issues?
No, but let me ask you this. Not on PTSD. I think our people understand exactly what we've been trying to stress this past month, and you know what occurs to veterans when they go overseas and fight for their country and experience the trauma and then come back and how it lingers. Probably for the rest of their lives. But, David, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Americans with Disabilities Act, because I think that kind of falls into the PTSD area as far as, you know, veterans who do come back and they do have PTSD.
Right. You know, I think they're trying
to get back into society. Some of them, you know, a lot of them are working, you know, but they find it very difficult. So how would you, you know, tell our listeners a little bit about how the Americans with Disabilities Act might be relevant to the PTSD issue?
Okay, yes, that's a great question, and I'd like to spend a few minutes talking about that. Many of you may have heard of the law, federal law called the Americans with Disabilities Act. It dates back to the early 1990s. There was also a law from the earlier 70s called the Rehabilitation Act, which applied to government agencies, federal government agencies, and federal government contractors, requiring those entities to reasonably accommodate. That Rehabilitation Act is still around, and it's still useful, but the Americans with Disabilities Act has received far more attention, and it's very important. And on our website, CoreyandHurleyLawGroup.com, we have a link to the ADA. It's basically, you need to know your rights. Knowledge is power. So we have returning service members with disabilities, whether they're physical or psychological disabilities. And, you know, most of them have disabilities, but they're still able to work and they still want to work. So this law is extremely important. It's basically look at it in terms of a law that prohibits discrimination against disabilities, and it guarantees that people with disabilities have the same opportunities as others. And it does so by requiring businesses to reasonably accommodate those disabilities. The reasonable accommodation is really the buzzword. What can those reasonable accommodations include? They can include changing the work environment or the job duties to try to eliminate problems or barriers to keep the individual from being able to perform the essential function of the job. But the reasonable accommodation requirement is balanced by the fact the law does not require employers to to incur what the law calls an undue hardship, which means accommodations that would result in significant difficulty or expense for the employer. So it's basically a balancing test. It's not always clearly a black and white issue, a clear line of demarcation. It's one where there you have to look at the facts and circumstances, and sometimes the size of the company and its available financial and other resources comes into play there too. This law applies to employers with 15 or more employees, but you know, we've got a nationwide audience. I would remind listeners that there are also state law counterparts to the ADA in many states, and those state laws may apply to employers that have a fewer number of employees as well. So it's important to keep your state laws in mind about that. So as far as PTSD, you know, you might be asking yourself, how does this come into play? Well, first of all, if you're a veteran with a disability that may not be physically obvious, obviously if a veteran has a disability that can clearly be seen, then that's one situation. But in a situation where a disability may be hidden, and in some situations, you know, psychological conditions, may be hidden, frequently are hidden, they're not obvious, and therefore, it's up to the employee or the veteran to decide whether they want to reveal that disability and request accommodation. So, all right, let's take a call. We have Mike from Florida on line 4. Doug, why don't we take this call from Mike?
Hello?
Hello, Mike. Hello, Mike.
Yes, how are you doing?
Very good. This is David. How are you this evening?
Good evening, Mike.
Oh, I'm doing okay. Basically, it takes so long to go through the process with the claims and everything. It's just unbelievable that a veteran has to die before he gets through the claim process, you know? It's unreal.
I absolutely agree. Yes. Yes.
Right now, I have multiple myeloma cancer, and also I had hepatitis C. Of course, the VA, I can't fault the VA hospital because it seems to me like they jumped right on that once, and actually they didn't tell me for, 17 years that I had hep C, and back in 2000 I got tested for it. I never got told by them that I had it, but it's just unreal that they jumped right on it and cured that. I got any costs from the VA because of the hep C, but with my multiple myeloma, if it wasn't for my wife's insurance and Moffitt Cancer Center, I had to bought the farm 3 or 4 years ago.
Wow. Wow. There's been a lot of controversy in the VA system, both on the medical side. You know, there was the big scandal that came to light. It was a scandal that the media learned about in 2014, but veterans knew. They just weren't getting heard by the media about long delays in care and veterans actually dying while they were waiting for care. So, there's a lot of room for improvement. I think the new VA secretary is committed to, you know, he says he's going to improve things on both sides, and we'll have to see, but it's important that we all, and that's one reason why we have this show every week, is to provide people with an opportunity to share their experiences and try to share the news. So
right. Well, I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I, you know, I thoroughly believe that the myeloma is because of Agent Orange and being in contact with it. It's just taking so long for them to come through with it. And last time I checked the VA website, I can't remember which one it was. They said they had handled all the Vietnam claims and they were moving on to the next war, you know, next era of veterans and their claims.
Heard that myself, Mike. When I was down at the VA not too long ago, I was talking to a veteran. And he was sitting there waiting to see a staffer, and he was a Vietnam vet, as I just said. And I was walking out, and he said, "Hey, lawyer." I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Is it true that they're no longer taking care of us Vietnam veterans?"
I said, well, I hope that it's not true.
Well, I would say that it's not as if the law has changed. It's not as if Vietnam veterans are barred from filing claims by some sort of statute of limitations, because they're not. A veteran serving in Vietnam could file an Agent Orange related claim or any other disability that he or she thinks was due to military service back in that, either in Vietnam or just during that era, that time frame. And if I think there is definitely the reality that, you know, with the very long Iraq and Afghanistan wars, there has now become, you know, increased attention on that generation, and the Vietnam veterans, understandably, are feeling kind of pushed to the side, which is particularly ironic because, you know, Mike, as well as anyone, that the Vietnam veterans, they often came. It was a controversial war, and many of them came home, and they were literally spat upon, and they were pushed aside, and they were not told of VA benefits, and it was a very different era than even today.
Oh, and, I'm very aware of all of that. You know,
you lived it, so you know, one of the things about the Vietnam Veterans of America organization, which I really admire, is part of their motivation is, you know, they're fighting for veterans so that what happened to the Vietnam veterans doesn't happen again to other generations. But you know, we always have to be vigilant, and that's what we're trying to do. So, Mike, thank you very much, and thank you for your service. Thank you for sharing your thoughts with us this evening.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay, thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Okay.
No.
You too.
That's tough stuff, huh, David?
Yep. Well, Rick, we've got a little less than 10 minutes left, about 8 minutes left in the show tonight, so let me just cover a few more things about the Americans with Disabilities Act, because it is an important law, and as far as PTSD, as I say, that a veteran you know, may have a hidden disability, and PTSD often falls in that category, so it's really up to the veteran to decide whether or not to reveal that disability and whether or not to request accommodation from an employer. You might be saying, well, what kind of accommodation might be relevant even? Well, a veteran with PTSD might be undergoing, you know, periodic counseling sessions. A veteran with traumatic brain injury or some other disability may be going through, you know, may have a daily routine that they have to go through. So perhaps adjusting their work schedule, allowing them time to attend counseling or treatment, is part of reasonable accommodation. And the point is this. I want to emphasize this law because if people aren't aware of it, they're not going to know. They're not going to know to use it. Knowledge is power. So, the ADA has become an extraordinarily popular law. It's done a lot of good for a lot of people with disabilities, and it extends to practically any disability that you can think of. So, please keep that in mind. And reasonable accommodations can take many forms. Go ahead, Rick.
Some other suggestions for that, David, would be allowing an employee to bring his or her service animal to work. You know, I know where I'm located. I see a lot of that, not only bringing the service animal to the restaurant where they might be eating, but I also see them at Walgreens where they're working behind the counter and stuff like that. We have a lot of our veterans who have tinnitus. So if they're working somewhere, maybe they should suggest to the employer to let them play some soft background music or sounds to help block out that ringing in the ears, which can be so bothersome.
Right.
So there are, as you're saying, David, there are a lot of remedies out there and accommodations and reasonable accommodations that our veterans could take advantage of. But they, like you said, they have to know about them, and they have to be willing to step up to the plate and tell the employer. And, you know, David, unfortunately, you know, especially dealing with, like, PTSD, you know, a lot of veterans are very shy about telling anybody that they have PTSD. So it's kind of a, you know, trying to find the employer who is going to be empathetic or sympathetic to the plight of a veteran who is suffering from PTSD to make those reasonable accommodations.
Right, right. Yeah, it does require involvement on both sides. The veteran to ask for the accommodation, but the employer needs to do the right thing, which first of all the law requires it, but second of all it's the right thing to do for our veterans. So for additional information about the Americans with Disabilities Act or the Rehabilitation Act, there is a ton of information out on the internet. Great thing about the internet, the U.S. Department of Justice has information, the Department of Labor has information, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has information, the VA has information about it. So all you have to do is ask, and it's, the information is there. You can easily look it up. But again, know about the law and look in to see how you can use it to help you if you're in that kind of a situation, or if you know someone that's in that kind of a situation where they really are want to work, perhaps are having difficulty finding work, and be aware of your rights under those laws. So, Rick, tied into the whole PTSD issue is a program also that we've talked about in previous weeks, but I think is very important to continue to mention, and that's the VA's program called Coaching Into Care.
Yep.
Can you tell us about
that?
David.
Yep, it's a vital program, and it's an important program, which, like you said, we've discussed in previous weeks. If you are a family member of a veteran who has left the service and is having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, please be aware of the VA's program called Coaching Into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veterans. Give the program a call, toll free, 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's Coaching Into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. And as we've been discussing on this show tonight and in previous nights, especially something like PTSD, it is a family issue. Yes, it's the veteran who is experiencing it, but it's the family who has to help the veteran deal with it. So a program like Coaching Into Care can be extremely helpful. So I urge all families of veterans to look into that program. Anything else, David?
Well, I think there are so many other, I mean, across the country, there are literally thousands of veteran groups and veteran support organizations such as, Winkler's Wish Foundation, that Rebecca Winkler has discussed. That it's an excellent support organization and support from other families, other veterans is very important and very helpful. So check out other resources in your local area, other support groups, other veteran groups that are there. And I'm sure you'll find them. And if you need help, give us a call. We'll help you find them in your area. Along the same note, though, on the topic of PTSD awareness, the VA does have a veterans crisis line. So if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in any type of a crisis, the VA's veteran crisis line is there to help. It's a 24-hour a day, 7-day a week operation, and the toll-free number, if you want to write this down, is 1-800-273-8255, and then press the number 1. That's 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans committed suicide because they didn't get the help they needed. We often hear that it's 22 veterans a day that commit suicide. I don't know if that number is low or how accurate it is, but the message is that a lot, and it's every day. So please help veterans get the care they need to cope with their problems, and the Veterans Crisis Line is one way to do that. So, well, it's been a very fast show for us tonight. We thank everyone for listening. We thank those that took the time to call in, and we apologize to those that called in, but we weren't able to get to their call quick enough. We hope that they'll still listen again next week and perhaps call us back. We'd like to thank our show sponsors, as I said earlier, including the American Legion Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles Newman and Corey and Hurley Law Group. We'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. And if you want to listen to our prior shows, Rick Hurley's given you that website. I'll give it to you again. It's bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. You can listen to our archived podcast of prior shows. And we'll be back next Monday, same time, same station. So that's our show for tonight. Please tune in again next week for another great show. Good night.
Good night. Good night, David.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.